Tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. U.S. trade with Africa offers a challenge and opportunity as close to 1,200 American and African business leaders are currently meeting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to discuss ways of boosting trade and investment between the regions. Direct flights between the U.S. and African countries, as well as trade pacts like AGOA, have the potential to push trade further than ever. But analysts say Africans need to be better poised for the challenge, and deals with its investors are more fairly negotiated. James Shikwati is a trade economist in Nairobi.
I would say, don't surrender to the U.S. to prepare you to be export ready. Once your country is AGOA eligible, you should invest heavily in your population to have a constituency of exporters that can take advantage of AGOA.
AGOA allows nearly 40 countries in sub-Saharan Africa to export some goods free of duties and quotas to the U.S. Burundian police say at least 8 people have been wounded in a series of grenade attacks in the center of the capital, Bujumbura. A police spokesman said 2 people have been arrested for their alleged roles in the attacks. The first grenade exploded around noon Wednesday in front of a telecom shop operated by a Vietnamese businessman. Another explosion happened in the parking lot for the National Post Office headquarters, damaging an empty car. A third bomb exploded in Bujumbura's open market. Officials at Somalia Civil Aviation Authority said Wednesday they found no evidence so far of a criminal act in the explosion of an airliner which took off from Mogadishu's airport and returned for an emergency landing. Investigators moved the plane from the runway to a private hangar. Foreign technical experts were involved in the inquiry. This is VOA News. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari urged the international community Wednesday to help end the turmoil in Libya, warning that it was creating a strategic time bomb for Africa and Europe. In a speech to the European Parliament, Buhari said the situation in lawless southern Libya was particularly alarming as it was creating a flow of arms affecting Nigeria and other countries. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Wednesday his country's military will not stop its airstrikes in Syria until terrorist organizations there are defeated. His comments came as the United Nations tries to keep its fragile Syrian peace talks in Geneva moving forward after a day in which neither the government or opposition delegation held a formal session with UN envoy Staffan de Mistura. UN agencies are mobilizing communities in Latin America and the Caribbean to stop the spread of the Zika virus, which has infected tens of thousands of people in about 25 countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Zika virus in itself is not much of a threat. Its symptoms are mild and not life-threatening. But the virus is suspected of causing birth defects in newborn babies. More than 4,000 cases of microcephaly, a condition that causes abnormally small brains in babies, have been found in Brazil. The explosive surge of this disease has prompted the World Health Organization to declare the Zika virus a global public health emergency. No vaccine is available to protect pregnant women against the virus, so WHO is urging communities to do battle against the disease to protect pregnant women from being bitten by the Aedes mosquito, which transmits the virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Again, this helmet camera view showing the flash drive.
What you hear is a control room for the International Space Station as two Russian cosmonauts began a 5.5-hour spacewalk at the International Space Station Wednesday. They're to collect an experiment containing biological and biochemical samples located outside the station. That's according to NASA. The samples are being tested for exposure to an open space environment. The condition which the samples are exposed to include cosmic radiation, vacuum, full-spectrum solar light, and more. The stock market has given up an early gain and trading lower at midday Wednesday as investors give a thumbs down to a number of corporate earnings reports, including steep cutbacks at Yahoo. Chipotle Mexican Grill also plunged after saying an E. coli outbreak at its restaurant hurt sales more than anticipated. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 62 points to 16,094 as of 10 a.m. Eastern Time. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihei Suohib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Militants attacked a pipeline last week in Nigeria's oil-producing Niger Delta, sending crude flowing into nearby creeks. Attacks on oil pipelines in the troubled region are on the rise.
That's Chris Stein reporting from Lagos. Details coming up.
The prosecutors are appealing for life sentences for all those convicted in last May's coup plot.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Guinea, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour in Burundi, government officials report at least three explosions in the business center of Bujumbura. At least eight people are reported injured, but few other details are available. Also today, prosecutors are appealing for life sentences for all those convicted in last May's coup plot, instead of just some who were found guilty. Last month, four ex-generals were given life sentences, while nine other people received 30-year terms and eight soldiers were given five-year sentences. Prosecutors also say that seven people who were acquitted should be retried. What's more, prosecutors have released the names of 34 opposition leaders, civil society members, and a journalist for their alleged role in the coup attempt. All are now in exile. The man accused of leading the coup plot, ex-General Godfrey Nyambre, is now the head of the Foribu rebel group. He's Burundi's former intelligence chief.
Militants attacked a pipeline last week in Nigeria's oil-producing Niger Delta, sending crude flooding into nearby creeks. As Chris Stein reports from Lagos, attacks on oil pipelines in the troubled region are on the rise.
The attack on an Agip pipeline near the community of Brass in the southern Bayelsa state polluted fisheries in the region. Senator Ben Murray Bruce, who represents the area, told VOA the pipeline has since been capped. A spokesman for AGIP did not respond to an email message seeking comment. A program manager for the Nigerian environmental group Environmental Rights Action, Mike Karipko, said the pipeline attack was, by his count, the fifth on an oil installation since the beginning of the year. He said the increase was unusual after 2 years of relative calm. The Niger Delta was once the site of an armed militancy by locals who said oil extraction polluted the environment and brought no benefit to their impoverished communities. In 2009, Nigeria's government started a program to pay off the militants with training programs and monthly cash allowances in exchange for peace. Anyakwa Nsirimovu is the executive director of the Institute of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law in the oil production hub Port Harcourt. Nsirimovu attributed the recent increase in pipeline vandalism to the filing of charges against prominent former militant government Akpomupolo, better known as Tom Polo. A judge ordered him arrested last month on a number of corruption-related charges.
Whoever is doing this, they are doing that, you know, to probably think that we'll be able to stop the federal government from getting Tom Polo to account.
Kirikpo says the attacks are greater than one man. Nigeria's government is trying to wind down the Delta Economic Program. Kirikpo says some of the former militants do not want it to end.
It is not apprehension by the ex-agitators who have been benefiting from this particular process to get government to come back and see if they can continue the amnesty process and the payments that they do monthly on a permanent basis.
Tom Polo has yet to be arrested. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
UN agencies are mobilizing communities in Latin America and the Caribbean to stop the spread of the Zika virus, which has infected tens of thousands of people in about 25 countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Zika virus in itself is not much of a threat. Its symptoms are mild and not life-threatening. But the virus is suspected of causing birth defects in newborn babies. More than 4,000 cases of microcephaly, a condition that causes abnormally small brains in babies, have been found in Brazil. The explosive surge of this disease has prompted the World Health Organization to declare the Zika virus a global public health emergency. No vaccine is available to protect pregnant women against the virus, so WHO is urging communities to do battle against the disease to protect pregnant women from being bitten by the Aedes mosquito, which transmits the virus. WHO Maternal Health Director Anthony Costello says communities must remove all stagnant pools where the mosquitoes flourish. He says mass community engagement and mobilization of women's groups can do a lot to provide women and pregnant mothers with the information they need to protect themselves and their babies.
If we learn one thing from Ebola, mobilizing communities is an absolutely critical public health measure. And then we need to educate health workers, particularly the midwives and obstetricians and healthcare workers that look after pregnant women, and make sure that everyone gets the information on risks and diagnostics as hopefully the situation changes.
Spokesman Christophe Bouyrak says the UN Children's Fund is running a community mobilization campaign in Brazil with messages on how to avoid mosquito bites and eliminate breeding sites,
including using insect repellent, covering as much of the body as possible with long, light-colored clothing, removing places where mosquitoes can breed, and putting screens on windows and doors.
UNICEF is mainly engaged in Brazil, but the agency is also scaling up its support to other countries in the region as a precautionary measure. UNICEF is launching a $9 million appeal to finance the programs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hayes Wuhib, 12 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In Burundi, prosecutors are appealing for life sentences for all those convicted in last May's coup plot. And UN agencies are mobilizing communities in Latin America and the Caribbean to stop the spread of the Zika virus. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Winter continues to complicate Europe's migrant and refugee crisis. Reuters reports about 3,000 people spent the night in freezing temperatures at the Greek-Macedonian border. The crossing has been closed due to economic protest by farmers and taxi drivers on both sides of the border. The migrants and refugees are in and around a camp near the Greek village of Adomeni. The camp is full, and about 80 busloads of new arrivals were stopped on the highway heading for the camp. Reuters says up to 6,000 people are now stranded on the road in the cold. Sea crossings from Turkey to Greece continue every day despite the winter weather. Meanwhile, in Germany, the federal cabinet approved legislation tightening restrictions on migrants and refugees. One bill declares that Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia are so-called safe countries. That means German immigration officials can more easily reject asylum applications from citizens of those countries. More than 1 million refugees and migrants entered Germany last year.
Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court has struck down a criminal defamation law that has led to hundreds of journalists being arrested in past years. Sebastian Amonfu has more from Harare.
Justices from Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court unanimously struck down the criminal defamation law after an official from the Attorney General's office, Veneranda Munyoro, was forced to concede the legislation had no place in a democracy. She refused to speak to journalists after the court ruling.
No, I'm not allowed to talk to the press, sorry.
But you were speaking in court?
That was court.
What was the difference now?
I'm outside court.
In their application, journalists from the Media Institute of Southern Africa argued criminal defamation was unconstitutional and violated media freedom guaranteed by Zimbabwe's new constitution. Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe head Nhlanhla Ngwenya said it is still early to fully celebrate.
It's a small victory in the sense that we still have quite a number of laws that can still be used to criminalize the profession of journalism. There's still a litany of laws that Zimbabwe still needs to fight. But having said that, we are coming from a period where criminal defamation was now becoming the preferred law that members of the ruling elite were now using against journalists. They were now recklessly and wantonly using the law where they felt stories were quite unpalatable.
Another law journalists want struck from the books is the Official Secrets Act, which criminalizes reporting on cabinet meetings less than 25 years after they are held. Nqaba Machazi, editor of privately owned daily The Newsday, was one of the journalists who had taken President Robert Mugabe's government to court over criminal defamation for a story published in 2011. He says the Wednesday ruling does not give Zimbabwean journalists the right to report lies as civil defamation can be used by an aggrieved party.
You still can't write recklessly. You still have to follow the ethics, truth, and objectivity. But the import of it is you just can't be arrested for writing falsehoods or stuff like that. We also have to remain objective. We can be sued, and that still drags our name in the mud all the same.
Zimbabwe is one of the African countries where media freedom is a rare commodity. Since the early 2000s, several journalists have been arrested and some deported for various offenses under different media laws. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
At last December's Paris Climate Summit, negotiators gave a much higher priority to protecting forests than in past meetings. Trees capture and store a lot of carbon that would otherwise be released into the atmosphere. But new research suggests that unless indigenous peoples' land rights are protected, efforts to reduce deforestation coupled with sustainable development may be in jeopardy. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Sustainable forest development has been discussed since the 1980s, but little was achieved over the ensuing decades. Then in 2005, forest conservation was linked with climate change mitigation. 10 years later, in Paris, negotiators included in their climate agreement an article that encouraged forest conservation and sustainable land management. However, the Rights and Resources Initiative and TMP Systems have released new reports on insecure indigenous land rights and the risk that poses to climate change mitigation and emerging market investors. Andy White is coordinator of the Rights and Resources Initiative.
The term indigenous people refers to self-identified ethnic groups around the world. So the issue that we're discussing, insecure land rights, affects up to 3 billion people in rural areas.
White says forests are threatened by agricultural and mining projects, among others. He says if forests are to ease the impact of rising temperatures, they should be under the management of local communities who have a vested interest in the land.
One of the most important findings in recent years is that indigenous peoples and other local communities are generally more effective in conserving forests than governments are. So now that the world is committed to reducing emissions, stopping deforestation, the question of who's most effective is central to achieving our goals from Paris.
The research paper cites cases in Africa, Asia, and Latin America of governments refusing or resisting to recognize land tenure for indigenous people. Violence has erupted when development projects are undertaken without the consent or awareness of the indigenous population. The analysis says that's causing major financial risks to private industry engaged in extraction and export of commodities in developing countries. White gives the example of Cameroon awarding development rights to an Indonesian palm oil company.
The government offered the company an area of forests to clear to convert to an oil palm. And the government offered that concession without consulting with local people who lived there. And so the company showed up and began to clear forest. And, of course, there were violent protests. And eventually the company had to pull out. It cost them a lot of money, their investors a lot of money. So this is a common occurrence in many parts of the developing world.
He says money is not at the heart of these conflicts or disagreements. Rather, it's a lack of direct engagement with the local community and denying them a say in the design and operation of the project.
Most communities indeed want development, but they want development on their terms as well.
Ben Bowie is with the consultancy firm TMP Systems. It focuses on climate change, ecosystems, and economic development. Bowie says the firm offers tools to determine potential risks from insecure land and resources rights.
The real key here is to engage directly with the interests of local people. Investors must engage with a very diverse range of concerns, and that means understanding them in detail, who in the community wants this and who in the community wants that. It's a complex intelligence-gathering exercise initially, but also a process of social engagement to develop a relationship of trust.
The RRI and TMP reports say some countries with large forest areas, such as Indonesia and India, are poised to recognize land rights on a massive scale. But they say there continues to be strong resistance by government agencies, companies, and conservation organizations. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Cameroonian youths living close to the border with Nigeria are celebrating the efforts of a 34-year-old man who dropped his administrative duties in a well-established company and created an information technology training center. His goal is to empower youth and reduce the chances of them joining the Boko Haram terrorist group. Wakil Idi says he decided to help when he found out unemployment was leading young people to join Boko Haram in his town of Kosori. It borders Chad and is close to Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kenzeka has the story.
Wakil Idi says 5 years ago, he discovered that unemployed and poor youths in his locality were being promised better living conditions by groups of people that came from nearby Nigeria. He says many of them went but never returned, and those who escaped from suspected Boko Haram strongholds told stories of how they were sent to loot, kill and burn schools and churches.
Le phénomène de Boko Haram est le phénomène principal qui stimule.
He says that was when he understood Boko Haram disposed of resources that could easily be used to manipulate unemployed youths and those they rendered poor by destroying their businesses. He says he learned the terrorist group was offering up to about $5,500 for each person kidnapped or killed, and that was tempting to poor, suffering and jobless youths. Since 2013, Boko Haram has kidnapped scores of people from Cameroon, including a French family of seven, a German citizen, 10 Chinese road construction engineers, traditional rulers, and clergy. Cameroon's government refused to pay ransoms for their release, but said it negotiated their freedom. Idi says with turns and twists in Boko Haram's modus operandi, he escaped to Cameroon's economic capital, Douala, to learn information technology with the hope of returning to help his fellow Cameroonians by educating them on the dangers of joining Boko Haram and especially providing jobs for the vulnerable.
Je n'avais que quatre machines, quatre ordinateurs, avec un local qui va au-delà de 75 000.
He says even though he acquired only 4 desktop computers before returning to Kuseri, where he was asked to rent a hall for about $130, he was not discouraged from his plans to help young people in his hometown. Among the hundreds who have been trained at the Computer Institute is 36-year-old Hassa Abasmi. He says for 10 years, since he graduated from university in 2006, he has remained jobless. He says he wrote at least 10 competitive entrance exams to be recruited by the government of Cameroon, but was not hired, so he decided to be trained at the Information Technology Center and can now take care of his wife and 3 children. 30-year-old TJ Jacob also has benefited from EDIS initiative.
After my formation, he told me to stay.
He says after receiving training, he was asked to remain at the center and teach other youths. He says thanks to the knowledge he gathered, he can provide daily bread for his family. Cameroon's National Institute of Statistics reports the unemployment rate in Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria is over 16%, and the young are the worst hit by this affliction, coupled with poverty. The region also suffers from high levels of illiteracy and ignorance of religious teachings. Edi says faced with these challenges, he allows the youth to work as volunteers in a public secretariat he opens for individuals, businessmen and government structures to treat, process or photocopy documents and have access to internet facilities. He shares proceeds from the business with the young ones while waiting for companies or people who need their services to recruit them. At least 70 of them have jobs in the Chadian capital, N'Djamena, which is less than a kilometer from his center. Edi says he still expects the government of Cameroon and well-wishers to assist him, and he believes the fight against the Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram can only be won if more opportunities are created for vulnerable youths instead of concentrating only on weapons of war. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Kuseri.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on VOA. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the African Union Summit Year of Human Rights with a particular focus on women's rights. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as they discuss human rights. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. In Burundi, prosecutors are appealing for life sentences for all those convicted in last May's coup plot. And UN agencies mobilize communities in Latin America and the Caribbean to stop the spread of the Zika virus. Coming up, we'll have music from Guinea and in our feature segment, the third part of our series on people producing top quality food in South Africa. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehias Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are kicking off with African football.
Kim, let's kick off in Rwanda's capital, Kigali, where semifinal action is taking place at the African Nations Championship football tournament. Remember, VOA football fans, this tournament, also called CHAN, is for home-based players in Africa. So European-based stars like 2015 African Footballer of the Year, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon, who is based in Germany, are not eligible. In the first semifinal in Kigali, the 2009 CHAN champion, the Democratic Republic of Congo, holds a 1-0 lead over Guinea in extra time. Jonathan Bolingi Mpangi had the goal for the DRC in the 102nd minute. We hope to have that final result for you before I go off the air this evening. In the second semifinal on Thursday, Mali will go up against Ivory Coast in the fourth edition of the African Nations Championship. In English Premier League football action Tuesday, Jamie Vardy had two second-half goals, including a stunning volley at the hour mark to lift top-of-the-table Leicester City to a 2-0 victory over visiting Liverpool. Vardy now has 18 goals for the season, tops in the EPL. The surprising Foxes of Leicester remain 3 points ahead of Manchester City, which defeated Sunderland 1-0 on a goal by Argentine striker Sergio Aguero in the 16th minute. In another EPL result, West Ham defeated Aston Villa 2-0. Senegal's Cheku Kouyaté sealed the victory for West Ham with a goal in the 85th minute. Over the weekend, Man City cruised to a 4-0 victory over Aston Villa in the FA Cup. A teenage striker from Nigeria was the man of the match for Man City. So says our football guru, David Legg.
Nigerians must be very pleased indeed. Kelechi Iheanacho of Manchester City. He scored a hat-trick as Manchester City hammered fellow Premiership club Aston Villa 4-0 in the fourth round of the FA Cup. It was a break from league action in England at the weekend. It was the FA Cup, which is widely regarded as the number one club cup competition in the world. They're very popular with a long history and a lot of interest in this competition. So well done to Kelechi Iheanacho of Nigeria. And he was not the only Nigerian to score. Odion Ighalo, he scored for Watford. He only scored once, unlike the hat-trick of his compatriot. But it was enough to give Watford a 1-0 away victory over Nottingham Forest. Another African on target in the fourth round of the FA Cup was Aruna Kone from Ivory Coast. He scored the first goal as Everton won 3-0 at Carlisle. Yet another African scorer was Bertrand Traoré of the Burkina Faso. He scored one of the five goals as Chelsea hammered Milton Keynes Dons by 5-1. And still on the theme, Sonny, of African goals in Europe, you've guessed it. It's that man again, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the African Footballer of the Year for 2015. We commented last week that something very rare happened. He didn't score. He was obviously listening in to the Voice of America because he made up for it, Sonny, at the weekend. He scored both goals for Borussia Dortmund in a 2-0 win over Ingolstadt. Goals after 77 and 86 minutes. And that raised to 20 the number of Bundesliga goals that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored this season for Borussia Dortmund.
Speaking of the Bundesliga, David, can you give us an update on the tables in that league as well as in Spain?
Yeah, certainly, Sonny. And despite all those goals from Aubameyang, which makes him the leading scorer in the Bundesliga, Borussia Dortmund, although they're in second place, find themselves 8 points behind, you've guessed it, Bayern Munich. Every year, Bayern Munich dominate in Germany. It's a long, long time, Sonny, since they did not win the German title. After 19 rounds, Bayern have got 52 points, Borussia Dortmund 44, and then you've got to go way back to 34 points for the third-place team, which is Hertha Berlin. The fourth-place team are Bayer Leverkusen with 31 points, and then comes Schalke with 30, and Borussia Mönchengladbach with 29. So I don't think you need to be particularly brave, so I need to put a few dollars on the fact that Bayern Munich are once again going to win the German Bundesliga. And I think it's a fair bet as well that Borussia Dortmund will finish second. They're 8 points behind Bayern, but significantly they're 10 points in front of third place, Hertha Berlin. And then if we move on, Sonny, to the Spanish La Liga, arguably the best league in the world, the really big match, the dominant one at the weekend, was that between the leaders, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. They were level on points going into it. Atletico took the lead, but Barcelona hit back. And it's my team of not really having to guess too hard who scored. And, of course, it's Mr. Messi himself. He got the equalizer, and then Suarez got the winner. They're, of course, part of this dream Barcelona attack, which is completed by Neymar of Brazil. So Koke scoring for Atletico Madrid, Messi equalizing, and Suarez scoring the winner. All the goals coming in the first half. Now, the one thing about Atletico Madrid is they tend to be temperamental, and I'm afraid that was shown up very badly in the match against Barcelona. They had two players sent off. They finished with nine men, and that, of course, in the closing stages, went very much against them as they sought an equalizer. And Sonny, the tackling, some of it was absolutely ferocious. When those Atletico Madrid players get red cards, it's for the most unbelievably nasty tackles. It looks like they're trying to decapitate their opponents. You know, they leave the referees with absolutely no options. At the same time, Real Madrid, who, of course, one can never underestimate with the likes of Ronaldo in the side, they won 6-0 against Espanyol, and speaking of Ronaldo, he scored a hat-trick, one of the goals coming from a penalty. And you also look at their other scorers. It includes Benzema from France and Rodriguez from Colombia. Now, what does all this mean for the log? Well, Barcelona are out in front with 51 points from 21 games. Atletico Madrid have got 48 from 22. And Real Madrid have got 47 from 22. And I guess we can just include Villarreal because they've got 44 from 22. So to summarize, Sonny, Barcelona, with a game in hand, have got a 3-point lead over Atletico Madrid and a 4-point lead over Real Madrid. So you've got to say at this stage, in tennis parlance, it's advantage Barca.
Well, David, when you have Lionel Messi in your lineup, I think it's often advantage Barca. That's our football guru, David Legg. In more African football news, Gambia has named Sang Endong as the head coach of its national team, nicknamed the Scorpions. Coach Endong has stepped in as interim coach of the Scorpions on several occasions. He was previously let go as the permanent coach for Gambia in 2003. Endong signed a 2-year deal with the Gambia Football Federation, and he replaces Swiss coach Raoul Savoy, who left in December. Endong had been coaching the local club, Banjul Hawks, in Gambia's capital.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Here in Washington, President Barack Obama has honored the National Basketball Association champion Golden State Warriors at the White House. President Obama's favorite sport is basketball, and he's described Golden State star Stephen Curry as the best long-range shooter he's ever seen. Curry and the Warriors are here in Washington to play my favorite NBA club, the Washington Wizards, later Wednesday night at Verizon Center Arena, located just a few blocks from our Voice of America headquarters. The Warriors are off to one of the best starts in NBA history, having won 44 of their first 48 games. My beloved Wizards, meanwhile, have been less than magical. They have a losing record, 21 wins and 25 losses, and Washington's defense is rated one of the worst in the league. That does not bode well when you're facing a team like Stephen Curry and the Warriors, who excel with a fast-paced style and excellent long-range shooting. Let's go back to Rwanda's capital, Kigali, now for an update on the first African Nations Championship football semifinal. We're in a penalty kick shootout between the Democratic Republic of Congo and Guinea. The penalty kick shootout is knotted up at 2-2. Thrilling stuff in Kigali. The match was 1-1 after 90 minutes and extra time. So the winner of the shootout will advance to the final at the fourth Chan tournament. On Sunday, we'll have the second semifinal between Mali and Ivory Coast. But they're in a penalty kick shootout in Kigali, RD Congo, and Guinea. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of The Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, the third part of our series on people producing top-quality food in South Africa. And next, conflict threatens to impede Ivory Coast's reconciliation process. But first, some music. Here is Sayoun Kamara from Guinea with Umu.
I'm
Sayun Kamara from Guinea with Omu.
A legendary figure in agriculture in South Africa says the world no longer has any excuse for using pesticides and other chemicals on food crops. Margaret Roberts has been an organic farmer for more than 50 years. She says the expertise is now widely available to enable the globe to grow natural, healthy crops. In the third part of our series on people producing top-quality food in South Africa, Darren Taylor reports on one of the country's revolutionary farmers.
On Margaret Roberts' farm, ears are filled by singing birds and buzzing cicadas, eyes with a kaleidoscope of color, from blood-red roses to snow-white lilies, noses by aromas of herbs and fruits. Roberts is a stylish, refined lady in her mid-70s. She started her farm here at De Wild in South Africa's northwest province 30 years ago. She says creating an oasis out of dry, raw mountainside is the greatest achievement of her life.
So it is a most amazing journey that I've had against these hot slopes. I was forced into this area. I never would have chosen it because it has so little water. There's no river nearby. Hard to be a foot down the long way.
Roberts established one of South Africa's only truly organic estates by harvesting rainwater.
And I have my suppliers tell me I'm the only woman farmer with 93 5,000 litre tanks, and amongst those three 10,000 litre tanks. And through this, I am able to do this growing of the herbs and growing of the food plants. And I do it with such a passion that I think it's more the passion that keeps us going than anything else.
She's respected internationally as one of the first proponents of organic farming. To define the principle of organic is simple, says Roberts.
It means that no spray or fertilizer of any chemical description whatsoever has ever been used here.
In the 1970s and 1980s, new synthetic pesticides and fertilizers swept into farms across the globe and were credited with sparking mass food production. This is exactly when Roberts rebelled against the new technologies. She believed they were bad for the environment and ultimately bad for people's health. She says many in agriculture at the time condemned her stance.
The voice in the wilderness is exactly it. And I used to think, what am I doing? I think I was South Africa's first organic farmer. And I was passionate about it. I would use nothing that wasn't organic seed. I fought for that alone. They've laughed at me and thought I was completely mad.
Now, decades later, she's hailed as an agricultural visionary, and growing numbers of farmers in South Africa are rejecting pesticides and other chemicals to produce food naturally. Roberts walks a stony path and points to a bushy plant with tiny, tear-shaped leaves and bright green pods. She says organic chickpeas contain many nutrients essential to human health.
To me, that's one of the most easy crops to grow, and it's probably one of the most unbelievably perfect foods. But not out of a tin, and not bought, processed and mashed into stuff, but growing your own.
The Roberts farm abounds with edible crops.
I've got the most amazing squashes that are arm length now, and that are as delicious as a butternut, and it's half...
She also cultivates exotic plants like sapotes, a tropical fruit from Peru, and jelly palms. One of her favorites is stevia, a vine-like plant with sharp leaves, the extract from which is sweeter than sugar and far healthier.
We are now producing sweet and delicious things, but using this plant. I feel that it is like a kind of a mushroom that grows with great speed, filled with nourishment.
Robert's daughter, Sandy, a chef, uses ingredients from her mother's farm to create a variety of dishes, from stews to ice creams.
As we're going through the seasons, we are using very unusual plants. We're using the jabotikabas, which grow on a stem. It looks like big black grapes or marbles all the way along the stem of a plant. And when you harvest this, one can put it into a pot and boil it up and make the most exquisite juices.
Margaret Roberts' long fingers rustle through dry herb plants. She maintains there's no longer a need for farmers to use pesticides on crops because it's now known that sprays to protect them from insects can be made cheaply from natural plants everywhere, like South Africa's khaki bush.
And I'm a great age now, and I really can't believe that I'm still doing this kind of thing, and I'm still teaching it, and I'll do it until the day I can't talk anymore, because it's the most important thing of our lives.
People from all over the world visit Roberts to plumb her immense knowledge about crops and plants. She encourages them to become part of an organic revolution.
No matter the size of the ground we've got, even if it is a few pots, we can make a difference in our own lives and in the lives of those around us by growing organically produced seed, and secondly, to be able to use the preciousness of water by collecting rain.
Robert says this will help ensure that people have not just food in the future, but healthy food. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in De Wild, South Africa.
The 2010-2011 political crisis in Ivory Coast forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee to neighboring countries, leaving everything behind. When they returned, some found their land occupied by strangers, leading to clashes and intercommunal tensions. With more refugees still on their way back, the conflict threatens to impede the reconciliation the country has been trying to bring about. Emilia Yub reports.
In this region of Ivory Coast bordering Liberia, lush forest spreads as far as the eye can see. It is one of the most fertile regions in the country, but also one of the most heavily impacted by the political crisis after the 2010 presidential election. Post-election violence led about 300,000 people to flee the country, leaving everything behind. Many of them came from here and fled to Liberia. One refugee was Leontine Mea, who made a living by cultivating her ancestral land. She came back after 2 years in a refugee camp.
When I came back, I went to see my land, and I saw that distant relatives had sold my land and that other people were occupying it.
Land dispute is not new in Ivory Coast. In some areas, it dates back to the 1980s, but it has blown up in the past few years with the return of the 2010-2011 refugees. In some cases, community members or relatives claimed right to the land while the refugee was gone and sold it illegally, often to foreigners, leading to serious tension when the landowner came home. The United Nations Refugee Agency, which is helping the returnees readjust, also advises them on the legal procedure to recover the land.
It's happening a lot. It's one of the main issues that we are facing. So we have put in place a mechanism whereby we can follow we call it protection monitoring. You cannot have social cohesion when people don't get the rights to be reinstated.
Joël Gay also saw his land taken away, but he managed to find a solution thanks to the mediation of the local chief.
We went to see the chief of the village, and he proposed that we do share work. We thought about it and eventually agreed.
Settlements are not always so easy to achieve because most people don't have a land certificate and land boundaries are often blurry. Local authorities, such as the prefectures, are also involved in solving cases.
The state has issued a decree regarding the boundaries of village territories. The state is due to finance it. And I believe that if this operation goes through, it will really decrease the number of conflicts, not only here, but in the whole of Ivory Coast as well.
The stakes in Ivory Coast are high as repatriation of the remaining refugees from Liberia resumed in December, and several thousands are expected to come home in the next few months. Emilia for VOA News in Blodecan.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell, co-chair of President Obama's Task Force on Wildlife Trafficking, concluded an official visit to Gabon on January 25th, where she met with senior officials to discuss ways the United States and the African country can work together to combat the world's growing illegal wildlife trade, which is having a devastating impact on species such as elephants and great apes, pushing them into further decline and even near extinction. Reversing the scourge of wildlife trafficking requires bold action and commitment from the United States and international partners, and it was encouraging to see how our partnerships on the ground in Gabon are helping the country take swift, effective steps to shut down this trade that threatens to wipe out species around the globe, Secretary Jewell said. Making her first official visit to the continent of Africa, Jewell and U.S. Ambassador to the Gabonese Republic and the Democratic Republic of Sao Tome and Principe, Cynthia Akweta, met with Gabon's President Ali Bongo Ondimba, Minister of Environmental Protection and Natural Resources, the Forest and the Sea, Flore Josephine Mistoul, Minister of Sustainable Development, Economy and Investment Promotion Prospects, Regis Imangault, and Director of the National Agency for National Parks, Dr. Lee White. Secretary Jewell will next travel to Kenya and South Africa to continue these conversations. Gabon is refuge to more than 50% of Africa's remaining forest elephants, despite making up only 13% of the elephant's historic range in Central Africa. President Obama in July 2015 announced proposed regulations to prohibit most interstate commerce in African elephant ivory and further restrict commercial exports, which will result in a near total ban on the domestic commercial trade of African elephant ivory in the United States. In addition to wildlife trafficking, Secretary Jewell also discussed Gabon's interest in renewing its candidacy for the Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative and reinforced the importance of transparency across all sectors of the economy and society. Gabon has shown strong leadership in the region, and we support its progressive and ambitious vision for wildlife conservation and ecotourism while sustainably managing its natural resources, said Secretary Jewell. Leaders of both nations recognize the need to act now if we are to pass on a world to our children and grandchildren where marine and terrestrial ecosystems are intact and magnificent species still roam in the wild and are not just seen in history books.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the African Union Summit Year of Human Rights with a particular focus on women's rights. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as they discuss human rights. That's next time on VOA Africa.